Walter Starr, author of an acclaimed biography of one of Union College's most distinguished alumni, William Henry Seward, will deliver the keynote address at Founders Day today at 12:45 in Memorial Chapel on the campus of Union College in Schenectady. The event commemorates the 218th anniversary of the college's charter. A member of the class of 1820, Seward is best known as Abraham Lincoln's Secretary of State, helping to write and sign the Emancipation Proclamation. He was also governor of New York, a state and U.S. senator, as well as presidential candidate running against Lincoln in 1860. Walter Starr recounts Seward's life in his biography, Seward, Lincoln's Indispensable Man. And Walter Starr joins us this morning. Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Good to have you here. Also joining us this morning is the president of Union College, who knows quite a bit about this story as well, Stephen Ainley, and it's a great pleasure to welcome you back to the program. Thank you very much.
As always, it's great to be here. Thank you.
You were here last Founders Day, so it's a lovely to have you back. Thank you very much. Let us begin with you, Stephen, as far as why this is, when you talk about Founders Day, looking at an alum like this, I guess, is pretty perfect, isn't it?
Well, I would say it's near ideal. You know, Founders Day is in part a celebration of the granting of the charter, the first college or university in the state of New York to receive a charter from the Board of Regents. But it's also an opportunity for the Union community to remind itself of its history. And we try to do that every year. This year, of course, the timing couldn't be better with the new film on Lincoln, in which William Seward plays such a prominent role. He's sort of there in most of the scenes in that film, and then to have Walter Starr's biography, which I've had the sheer pleasure of reading. It's a terrific opportunity to bring all that together in one day where we celebrate Union and its alumni.
Oh, Walter, you were with us when the book first came out and joined us for a half hour, and I read the book, and it was fascinating. I remember talking at that point about so many people saying that he was sort of overlooked, Seward. Was there a lot on him? I mean, was there a lot? Because it seems like, looking at the notes, like you had a lot to go through.
Late in his life, a friend came to visit him at his house in Auburn, not too far from here, and Seward proudly showed him box after box of documents that he had amassed. And the friend wrote another friend to say that the future biographer's problem is not going to be finding material. It's going to be compressing all that material into a book that people can read. And yes, there was lots of material that people hadn't found before.
So when we talk about that lots of material, let's compare that to the fact that many people may not know the name.
Most people, when I said that I was working on this book, most people, taxi drivers and so on, knew his name. They knew that he bought Alaska. That's the one thing people knew about him. You know, a lot of other bits of his career were unknown. When I mentioned to Stephen as we drove over here that at the library here in Albany, when I said that I was working on a former governor, Governor Seward, the librarian said, "Oh, he was never governor." So, some important bits of his career are not in the popular memory.
You write in the book, although Union College was large for the time with more than 200 students, it was not so large that the students did not get to know President Knott personally. And then you say, like that of many students, Seward's attitude towards school was ambivalent. On one hand, he was ambitious. He wanted to distinguish himself. After a successful first term, Seward asked Knott whether he could move from the sophomore class to the junior class. So he did want to achieve and move forward.
He did. And I think part of that desire to jump a class ahead was that his father was very close with money. And so if he could have, gotten that college degree one year sooner, his father would probably have been happy. But he also said that, you know, he wasn't prepared to cringe to the faculty. My sense is that his relationship with Knott was much better than his relationship with any of the other teachers.
What was it about Union that brought him there in the first place?
I don't know for sure, and it's an interesting question because his father went to Columbia College, so in some respects that would have been the more logical. I think it was partly that Union was just on a tear at that time. It was the rising star of American education at the time Seward entered in 1816. And it might also have been, again, money. I think it would have been slightly more expensive to go to college in New York City at Columbia.
When you speak at this event this afternoon for Founders Day, what is the message you want to get across?
In one sentence, that Seward's view of the Union formed at Union College remained his view throughout his life.
And by Union, you mean his relationship with
the United States as a whole. He, Union College was the first place where Seward met and interacted with Southerners and began to see, you know, through the eyes of his classmates, the whole of the United States. Unlike others who thought that the United States would soon divide into two or three separate confederacies, Seward formed the idea at Union College that it would remain one, that it was sort of almost God-given that the United States was a single entity, not about to split into multiple entities.
As I mentioned, Stephen Ainley joins us as well, president of Union College. And it's important to note that as Walter mentioned of Union's place in the world and in academia at this time was so huge, and we think of Seward as Lincoln's indispensable man, but the list of people who were a part of his life and administration who came from Union is quite lengthy.
It's quite impressive. I've as I've said to people, no institution can really claim Lincoln as their own.
You know, right.
He had something like 18 months of formal schooling, if I remember correctly. But it is certainly true that Union played a very important part in his administration and in various life events. You know, and foremost among them has to be William Seward as his Secretary of State. And as you said at the outset, you know, he was not just his Secretary of State, but worked very closely with Lincoln. And I think one of the wonderful things about Walter's book is that you really gain a sense of how close the two of them were and how they did work together. But there were so many other Union College people who were involved in his administration. People like John Bigelow, who was his counsel to Paris, and we've been talking a little bit about Bigelow's role, but in Walter's book, you know, he suggests that Lincoln's appointment to the ambassador to France was not one that pleased Seward, and so Seward sent Bigelow, another classmate from 1820, to Paris to sort of serve as a backstop to ensure that the American policy was seen through. But there were people like Henry Halleck, who was the head of the Northern Armies, so-called old brains, sometimes criticized for his slow decision-making, who became chief of staff. There were people like William James Stillman, who was his counsel to Rome. And in other life events, some other people from Union College loom large, like Henry Rathbone, who was in the box with Lincoln in the Ford Theater along with his fiancée. Mm-hmm. Clara Harris, whose father was a Union College alum. And when Lincoln was assassinated and dying across the street from the Ford Theater, it was Phineas Gurley, another Union College alum who ministered to him, had to tell Mrs. Lincoln that he had expired, officiated at the White House funeral, and officiated at the graveside ceremony in Illinois. So, you know, throughout Lincoln's time, Union College was certainly a very central part of his life.
Walter Starr is author of the book Seward, Lincoln's Indispensable Man, and he will be delivering the keynote address at Founders Day today at 1245 at Memorial Chapel on the campus of Union College. You can find out more information about that event by going to union.edu. We will continue our conversation with Walter Starr and Union College President Stephen Ainley after this short break. Welcome back to the Roundtable. It's Founders Day at Union College in Schenectady, New York. They're having a special event, a Founders Day event at 1245 in Memorial Chapel, where the keynote address will be given by Walter Starr, author of the book Seward, Lincoln's Indispensable Man. And Walter Starr joins us this morning along with Union College President Stephen Ainley. And Walter Starr, I have to say, in reading the book, I was fascinated, probably most fascinated, by the relationship between Lincoln and Seward and how it developed. And the question I came away with is, and especially in light of what you were talking about, of having so much documentation, is that it's safe to say it was a complex relationship, right? I mean, that's safe to say.
Oh, yes.
We can start there.
Yes.
So looking at that complexity, is it? Do you ever get a clear sense of how they felt for one another, of what was said and what was felt? Was that apparent on any pages that you saw? Or as a biographer, was it your job to fill in some of those blanks?
Well, notwithstanding that there's a mass of material, there are always things that you would want. And I suppose right at the top of my list, I would love to have transcripts of some of their conversations.
Yeah.
White House tapes would have been a great...
Required, yes.
Would have been great. Because they were together so much during the Civil War years, I mean, you know, neither of them traveled out of Washington but a few times, and the most sort of well-known of those trips today, the Lincoln's trip to Gettysburg, Seward went along. They didn't write one another very often. And we don't have transcripts. And so one did have to do a certain amount of reconstruction to try to get at that relationship. But among other things, the diaries of some of Seward's colleagues in the cabinet are very revealing, showing their annoyance at how Lincoln and Seward together would make decisions and then sort of present them to the cabinet rather than bringing issues to the whole cabinet.
You get an idea that there was spirited argument, but that both men at some level felt, not to say they enjoyed it, but that they felt it was necessary.
Well, they were both lawyers, and so they had an appreciation of how, by having, you know, one person take one side and another take another and go at it for a certain amount of time, that you both might learn more about what really should be done.
And it is hard for us in this political climate, our current political climate, to imagine a relationship. And I guess you see this a little bit, but as far as of having somebody who's run against you.
Yes. I mean, there is the current parallel of
Obama and
Clinton.
Senator Clinton, Secretary
of State Clinton, former secretary now. Lincoln was far more dependent on Seward than Obama is on Secretary of State Clinton, because there really is no White House. You know, if he wants someone to argue with him, Seward's the best choice, just across the street in his house, or across the street. The State Department was kind of where the north end of the Treasury Building is now. So, I mean, all of this is within, you know, 10 steps, and you didn't have to call the Secret Service to get permission and a motorcade, regretfully perhaps, but that was true. They all just walked.
In looking at this story of William Henry Seward, Stephen, how much do you as a college president and does the college itself invest in learning about that history and documenting it for the institution itself, for its alum, for its current students?
Well, we spend a lot of time trying to remind students that by coming to Union College, they join a really grand tradition, that there's a legacy that they're part of, that they walked the same sidewalks that various luminaries walked. And we always try to make clear to them that with that remarkable opportunity comes an obligation, and the obligation is one to make a difference wherever, you know, one chooses to spend your time and effort. And Seward is a particularly useful person to try to make that point. And again, Walter's book, I think, does such a very nice job of preserving the complexity of a fellow who was certainly ambitious and had all sorts of aspirations. But the way I like to think about Seward is, at the end of the day, to use Walter's phrase, he was able to master his disappointment and ultimately throw himself behind Lincoln, ensuring that Lincoln gets elected. But more than that, trying to work for the common good. And my message to students today about Seward and about Union and our expectations for them is that, again, they have an enormous opportunity, but their responsibility is to work for the common good.
Do you see Walter, and I know I've asked this question of other great political leaders, could you see early glimpses of the political animal, if you will, of the politician when he was a state senator, a governor, senator?
When he was at Union College, a vice presidential candidate came to Union in early 1820 or late 1819, and Seward was selected by his fellow students to give the address of welcome, and his commencement address, which I found, talking about how the Union will probably be permanent, is in a sense arguing against those like Thomas Jefferson, who saw the current North-South crisis, this is 1820, as the precursor of the division of the Union into parts. So you don't have to go to when Seward becomes a state senator. You can find the political animal right there at Union College, or maybe I should use a grander word, the future statesman. The seeds of the future statesman are in place when he marches to get his diploma from Union College.
Did you see a grand progression, a transformation? I mean, did he change drastically in his approach?
Well, he grows older and more experienced, and
a maturity,
and he studies law, which may create a certain mindset that is both useful and, in some respects, a disadvantage for a political leader. But he is, it's a pleasure reading his letters home to his father. He is already, it was yesterday, in fact, rereading one of his letters as he approached graduation. He said, he felt that he had laid at Union College a firm foundation upon which a superstructure of knowledge and work and life could be built.
Mm. One of the things that I find fascinating, we've interviewed many, many people over the years about Lincoln and some of the foremost Lincoln scholars, and everybody says the same thing to me, which is that once they're done, that he stays with you for so long. And it's hard to shake him. Do you find that same thing with Seward?
Yes, and indeed with Lincoln. My next project is in the very same time period, same cabinet. I'm going to work on Lincoln's Secretary of War, Edwin Stanton. So I haven't been able to shake Abraham Lincoln, and I don't want to. I look forward to spending the next few years getting to know Edwin Stanton, but also getting to know Lincoln better, the sort of military side of Lincoln's time in office.
Stephen, how do you get a campus ready for Founders Day? What will be happening today?
Well, we harness a lot of our resources to make sure the troops come out, and I think in the time that I've been at Union each year, it's become a more popular event, and I think in part that's because we've really tried to focus Founders Day back on the history of Union. There was a period of time it had slipped a little bit away from that, but We will have all the coaches will encourage teams to come out, and teachers, of course, and non-members of the faculty encourage their courses, and the faculty themselves turn out. There are a number of sort of red letter dates at Union. One of which is the opening convocation. Another is a commencement at the end of the year. But certainly mid year, there's nothing more significant than Founders Day, a time when the community comes together and reaffirms itself as a community. And again, being able to celebrate someone like Seward is just a wonderful way to galvanize our efforts.
And let us not bury the lead here, but as far as commencement, Representative John Lewis.
That's right. No, we're very excited that he'll be joining us. We do a mini term at Union that allows students to accompany members of the faculty, and they go on travels for about 3 weeks, where they visit all the key sites of the civil rights movement. And it's I joined that group last year in Atlanta at the King Museum, and we traveled the city, and they meet with civil rights leaders and so forth. And one of the books they read, of course, is Lewis's own account of the movement, and they walk the bridge in Selma and in a sense recreate the situation that he found on Bloody Sunday, where he was the victim of a great deal of violence and the like. So people at Union are very excited. In fact, I hazard to say I've had more requests to meet with this commencement speaker than any that I can remember. So it's an exciting moment for us.
Very understandable. Walter Starr is author of an acclaimed biography on one of Union College's most distinguished alumni, William Henry Seward. The name of the book is Seward, Lincoln's Indispensable Man, and Walter Starr will be delivering the keynote address at Founders Day today at 12:45 in Memorial Chapel on the campus of Union College in Schenectady, New York. You can find out more information by going to union.edu, union.edu. Walter Starr and Union College President Stephen Ainley, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Enjoy today. Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.